Hey folks, we're back. It's a goodlifebabe.com. Jeff and Joel's Tales from New Orleans, episode 49 from the air-conditioned palace on LaPerouse Street.
Hey everybody, welcome back. It's goodlifebabe.com. Jeff and Joel's Tales from New Orleans, live from the pod cave, newly conditioned with air.
The air conditioning technician came by earlier today. About a week ago, it just got butt ass hot. It just did.
It's summertime, you know, in New Orleans, folks.
It's summertime in New Orleans. It was actually a really good, pretty lengthy springtime that we had this year. And the temperature was pretty moderate. And here at the Maison Duville, we have a kind of a system going where we'd keep the front door open and the windows, and
we have a flow of air
that would come through the house, and it would kind of cool things down.
The fans on,
and
it's manageable.
It was manageable when there would be some rain and things would be overcast, and it's European style, admittedly. And it was manageable, but then...
We're holdouts, Jeff. We have a philosophy.
We like
to hold out. We don't want to run the air conditioning too soon like pussies.
Yeah, but there's a good reason for that, too, which has nothing to do with masculinity. And it's because the air conditioning unit here has got some very small little bit of a Freon leak. So what we have to do is time it every year. So what you want to do is wait as long as you can to not use that Freon, and then charge it at the latest date that you possibly can when it gets sweltering. And so there's always like 1 week or 2 weeks where we're just like, Jesus Christ, man, we can't take it.
I barely slept like the last 3 days.
Well, you went and rented.
I checked into a hotel.
You checked into a hotel room night.
I had all these meetings on Friday, and I got back. I worked an event at work till like 8 p.m. Came home. It was a fucking oven in here. And I went on a Hotel Tonight. Shout out Hotel Tonight, everybody. Future sponsor of the pod. Went on a Hotel Tonight, and I got an Embassy Suite for $70.
An Embassy Suite.
And it was actually a suite.
Embassy Suite.
I was surprised
suite.
That it was a suite. Huh. It had a living room. And
nice.
Like multiple refrigerators,
oh, that's
multiple
cool.
televisions.
Wow.
It smelled really weird.
Did they have a mini bar in the room?
It smelled like poo. No. No.
What did it smell like?
Safe choice.
It
smelled like poo.
It smelled like poo.
Yeah. That part,
might be why it was $70.
That part was not great. But then they had the free breakfast in the morning. So I did that. I got the sausage and the bacon and the eggs.
Did they have the make your own waffle? I feel really chipped out when they don't have the make your own waffle.
Have you make your own waffle, make your own omelet, the whole nine
they
yards.
They had the waffle thing?
They had the whole thing.
Oh, wow.
The waffle thing, nice. The omelet thing.
It's not really the nicest thing ever with the make your own waffle.
That's pretty nice. But you can put the fruit on there, and you put the cream on there, and put the Cool Whip on there.
Don't you like? Did you make your own waffle?
I didn't. I just.
You didn't.
I was so out of it, dude, because it was the first time I had been having it. Look, we had gotten back from Bonnaroo.
You're not a man who takes advantage of those things.
I know. I'm
typically.
Not. I'm horrible with the shit
you're not,
like that.
You're not.
I couldn't even find utensils. I ate like grits with my fingers.
Like, if they have the little mini muffins that are prepackaged, you probably have a couple of those. Yeah, right, exactly.
I'm like, get my shit and go.
What do they call that?
Old SNL.
The bear claw.
With John Belushi and the little chocolate donuts.
Yeah, right.
But I had like a 9:15 meeting like 5 blocks away, and then I had another meeting after that, and then I just came back, napped from 11 to 12, and then I had my afternoon meetings. And I got to tell you, folks, sometimes in life you just got to fucking... take care of yourself, and that's what that was.
Well, look, it's just to say this, that if you're thinking about coming to New Orleans in the middle of the summer and you're willing to compromise your principles from an olfactory standpoint, you can get a $70 suite that smells like poo at the Embassy Suites downtown.
And get a free breakfast
here in New Orleans. I mean, it's just the way that it is. Those deals have been around forever. I can remember even when I was working at the hotel, at the St. Louis Hotel in the early 90s, they had they had the summertime deals, and it was miserable. I got it. It was the most miserable time to work at a hotel. You have to know that this is true, what I'm saying, right? You can't comment on it right now because you still work at a hotel.
Well, no, it's actually, I kind of like the summer. It's really slow. Like,
less people yell at you.
Yes, that's working at the front desk, that's the best part. Like, when there's less people in-house, there's less people to get yelled at by.
Well,
and I just hate people is the thing. So the less of them, the better.
So... But then you don't make as much money off the commissions and whatnot, well, right? Isn't it true?
That's the thing, though. We lower our prices so you can get, like, everyone to end up upgrading, like, during the summer, usually, because we lower the prices so much.
Yeah, yeah.
So I usually, it's been half a month. I think I'm at, like, $8,000 in upgrades right now, and I'll get 15% of that. So
can wow. I tell you what the bane of my existence was, man? This was it, all right? And times have changed and vehicles have changed, and this may seem a little strange to you, but I know you know what I'm talking about, Spencer. But they used to have these things called conversion vans, right? And the conversion van was like you bought a basic van, and then there were these companies that they would you chop the top off of the van, and they would put an extra thing on top of your van, which would make it more spacious, more like a camper. And so it would
you could stand up
a transformer van, you said?
It was kind of like a transformer van, right, exactly. And so you could stand up in it. Right. So there would be this like fiberglass addition that had like windows and shit on it. And they'd just go and they'd slice the top of your van off and they'd stick that thing on top of it. And it was called a conversion van. It was one of these really dumb American ideas.
Jeff, I had a Volkswagen Beluga.
I don't even know what that is.
Man. You can Google it. That? You can Google it, Spencer.
Yeah, what's the beluga?
Beluga, it's I think it's white whale.
It is a white whale.
Yes. And you could stand up, and I think it might actually be
a dolphin, in all honesty. I think it might be.
Is that right? But I had.
We got to Google it.
That was my second vehicle that I ever owned in Flagstaff, Arizona.
Uh-huh.
And you could stand up in it at all of 6'3".
And that was the basic idea, was to make every van into a beluga. And they were super cheesy, right? And
really cheesy.
And here's the thing. An army of those conversion vans would come in during the summer because all the cheap-ass, like, every, you know, Tom, Dick, and Harry hillbilly person in the South is, like, holding out to get the coupon deals that you can get at the Louisiana-Mississippi border on the way down to New Orleans. So you get this coupon from the rest stop, and you come in, and so they would be like, oh, my God, a room for $45 a night at the St. Louis Hotel.
Oh, nice.
But here's the thing, because we didn't have a parking lot, we contracted with a parking garage that...
You make $45 on the parking.
Well, here's... Exactly, right? Well, the hotel wouldn't make shit, because they would come in the conversion van... And every time one of these things would come down the street, I would know. I could sense it. You know, I'm like, this person's going to pull up right the fuck here, and they're going to want me to check them in, right? And inevitably, it's like there's an 85-year-old woman that's got, like, an oxygen tank, right?
Right, right.
And, like, some son who's like, I'm taking my mama on a vacation.
Right,
you know, and it'd be like, well, sir, we don't have...
Which means he's just going to get drunk and take mama's pills.
He's just like, whatever hillbilly hick empire it is that they have, he's like, whatever horrid life this guy's lived, and 5 terms in prison or whatnot, now that mom's on her way out, he's like, I'm going to make sure that I don't get kicked off of that inheritance, man. I'm going to inherit the junkyard. Right, and so he's making sure, and he's taking mom on a vacation to fucking
Sanford and Sonny.
But he's Sanford and Sonny, but he's also like, I'm gonna send her on some like you know elderly swamp tour, and he's gonna like go buy hookers, you know, like while she's doing that.
Sure.
So anyway, that's the kind of you know just to give you an idea of like the kind of people that came into New Orleans
during
the summertime. But there was never any place to park the thing, and I always used to tell them I was like, we don't have a policy on it, and like in other words, you're on your own to park it because we didn't have any clearance.
Yeah.
And they'd always go, well, I'm parking on the street right here, and I was like, well, they're gonna come and tell you.
Also, folks,
you're an asshole. And then they would start, and then. my tips would just evaporate, you know?
Right.
And exactly. Most of those people don't give you tips anyway.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, it was the worst.
Yeah, like I know our bellmen are not happy with this.
No, the bellmen,
the valet aren't happy. Bartender is probably like meh.
I think certain hotels should give up on their bell service during the summer.
The cheapest conferences and trade shows come into New Orleans over the summer.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah.
So, the Librarian Conference of America or whatever will come in July because it's super cheap, and those are the cheapest motherfuckers ever.
Oh, Human Resources is
20,000 librarians.
Huge. Conference right now for a bunch of people in Human Resources.
Right. Yeah, Human Resources people.
So many Lindas at the hotel right now.
They're not throwing money down.
It's true. It is so true, man.
Summer is so weird in New Orleans, dude.
It's like the opposite of Decadence Festival when like every rich gay person in America visits New Orleans, you know? And they're like, huh, you helped me with my luggage. Here's $20. Boom. You know, it was like, that was like a fantastic tip.
Yeah, Decadence.
You know, now it's more like, can I put cash down for the room? Fuck. Yeah, all right.
And we have Essence Fest too in the summer. Essence Fest is good.
Oh, that's right around the corner. Yeah.
Yeah.
Beginning of July.
4th of July weekend.
But look, I'm kind of carrying the bulk of the talking here on this one. But they're just, there's not a lot going on. Tracy and I are going to the likely. Oh, well, look, here, two things. There's not a lot going on. Two things. One, there's the potential for a tropical storm is coming through in the next 2 days.
Yeah, we've had a lot of people calling the hotel and asking, you know, what's the cancellation policy if I cancel, like, tomorrow?
And it's funny that people are going to listen to this podcast and be like, these New Orleanians are so irresponsible. Why did we pay for them after Katrina? We should have let them drown. Because here we have another tropical. Well,
the thing is, they didn't give us enough money to do good levees.
Well, I know. Well, we get that.
I don't know about that one.
But here's the thing. It's like we're having a podcast and like we almost forgot to talk about the fact that there's like a cyclonic storm of some nature that's about to bear down on the city. But what people don't understand is that the intensity and nature of these storms is the thing that you have to keep in mind when you're judging the worthiness of the lives of the people in New Orleans, which I know at least about 40% to 50% of America is doing in regard to New Orleans in terms of the hate factor. So for those people, first of all, fuck you, and second of all, you don't understand how it works. This storm is not even a tropical depression yet, and it may be up to tropical depression status or tropical storm status by the time it makes landfall somewhere between New Orleans and Iberville Parish, which is probably going to mean that it's going to be around Houma somewhere. It's going to come in. And the thing is that you have to understand that really you're only going to get your dander up about a storm when it gets into like hurricane status and roughly about, you might, maybe a tropical storm, but something that's a tropical depression that just turned into a tropical storm is not something that you're going to like, you're not going to bail town and go visit your out of town relatives. No,
you'll
in
just
Virginia.
Get battery through your flashlights and
and hunker down for a couple of
get
days.
Some candles.
You know?
Fill stuff up in a cooler.
You just said, Jeff. You just said that
make it a hurricane
yesterday
party.
That you got a notice from your insurance company that you no longer have to, or your mortgage company that you no longer have flood insurance.
Well,
but I'm like, you should probably still have flood insurance.
Well, yeah, I'm going to have flood insurance. I'm going to maintain flood insurance. But here's the truth is that...
so the insurance company said, hey, you don't need flood insurance. I don't know if I buy that.
But that's what happens. Like, there are people who rejoice in home ownership who are like, yes.
I don't have to have this anymore.
I don't have to have this insurance.
Less than $100 a month.
In a town where 98.5% of the city flooded from a storm, you know. but here's the thing: in that 1.5% of the city that didn't flood, the Maison Duville is right in that corridor. So that's one of the reasons why. But the other reason why is because a lot of the construction, to your point, has really panned out in terms of protecting the city and making sure that you know, the kind of flooding that we saw during Katrina is less likely to occur again in the way that it occurred, which is not to say that
City, I mean, if the levee goes, it's going to happen again.
But yeah, if the levee,
but we have,
but a tropical storm isn't going to break the levee.
But the thing is, a tropical storm's not going to break the levee. And the other point is this: is that all of the dams, if you understand it that way, I mean, but the dams are now the pumps the things that dam the water off from the lake along the canals. Which people, if you understand what happened during Katrina, is that the weak point are these drainage canals that we have in the city. That's where all the breaches took place. And so those canals will no longer be inundated with water from a storm surge any longer. They are still, in fact, doing work on some of those canals to this day, right now. And the insurance companies have looked at it. The Army Corps of Engineers has gotten with those insurance companies, and they issued a report last year where they downgraded a bunch of zones in Louisiana and said that, like, certain people, if you don't need flood insurance at all, you certainly don't need the kind of flood insurance that you needed before that that report was issued. So a lot of people are getting some relief on that front because of what the federal government has done through the much maligned Army Corps of Engineers, federal government. The federal government, ladies and gentlemen, actually doing something positive to impact lives in New Orleans.
That's right.
You know, your tax dollars at work.
So we got LSU against
Oregon State. We love your tax dollars.
Is that what's happening right now?
Yeah.
Yep.
What do we have on television, Spencer?
Yeah, it's LSU versus Oregon State, College World Series.
Number one versus number four, is that what it is?
That is it. Oregon State's been...
is this the finals?
No.
Semis or something?
It's still kind of like the first bracket.
I see.
Yeah.
LSU's got one win already.
Yeah, we're 1-0. It's a double elimination right now in the
bracket. Now he says we.
Well, I went to LSU.
He went to LSU. He can claim that. Look, it's going to be a long process, but one day Spencer's going to walk in here with a Saints hat on. It's just going to happen. You know it will.
So what else? We got we're all over the place, folks. The T.J. Miller special. I met T.J. Miller. He has a special on HBO that just came out. I met him at the Kid Koala show that I did about 6 weeks ago, and he came in, and I've talked about that on the pod. And he's exactly who you think he is. He's got his bodyguard with the man bun and all that shit. And his wife is super lovely. And his wife introduced him for the comedy special. Super sweet. And I was pleasantly surprised at how good of a special it was. I thought that it was existential, sort of, you know, I thought. I thought the dude's fucking nuts, you know, and like a really great.
I don't know. I don't know how it was existential in a Dostoevskian sense, but it was. It had a lot of peaks and valleys. Because it is. I mean, it's idiosyncratic. He's definitely got his own tone and his own place in the world of comedy.
And he knows how to take a beat. I mean, Spencer, you'd brought that up with one of the comics at Bonnaroo that didn't take a beat. Who was that dude?
It was Moshe Kasher. He was just kind of... I think he was on blow or something, because he was just so fast with his jokes, and like it was just rapid fire.
He was kind of the opposite of T.J. Miller. I mean, he was so annoying, that guy, man. It just...
T.J. Miller...
I'm not saying that the... I mean, I could see him as a comedy writer, but it's just like, I don't understand the idea that, like, you know, speaking like Bobby Jindal, which is like so fast with so many words that no one in the audience can digest, has any time to die. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you have to give people an opportunity to laugh.
Exactly.
At your jokes as a comedian before you get into the other one, or else they've missed the content of the next joke.
And look, he did great crowd work, which is not easy to do, I think.
Yeah.
It was completely improvisational, and he took his beats, and he was also drenched in water and sweat from like
You don't know why. He comes out.
He comes out just drenched.
And he's just drenched in water.
And he ends up making a joke like 40 minutes in about that. But
it doesn't reference the initial
drenching. The whole time, you're like, why is he completely soaking wet? Right? And he's also like completely confident and enjoying the fuck out of himself.
Yeah, he seems to be doing that.
Like, he's really, 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 like, proud of what he's doing. Like, he's laughing at his own jokes in a way that was, kind of charming. I gotta say, I thought personally, like, having met him, that he's a little bit of a dick. And I think he has that reputation. But I was not expecting that type of thoughtful performance that he gave.
He came across to me as an art school actor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could see that.
Yeah, because he has that oddball, quirky thing going on, you know? Like, if he was from New Orleans, he would have graduated from NOCA.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. And he clearly loves his wife, and he, like, makes that a point throughout the show, you know? And she's, like, an integral part of the show, which I thought was interesting. Having met her...
I wouldn't say she was integral. I mean, she's kind of like integral in the way that a magician's assistant is integral.
Sure. Yeah. But still present.
Yeah, yeah, she's present for the show.
Right. And she's like super sweet and kind. Having met her, I was like, he's kind of, they're yin and yang, you know? She's sweet, he's a dick.
Yeah, I think it's pretty good. Pretty good special. Look, this is what we're doing right now. We're talking about TV shows. The only sporting event.
New Orleans summer, everybody.
I got to say this.
Sorry.
I think that's why I'm planning a vacation soon. I just got to get out of here.
Yeah, I am getting out of here.
Where are you going?
I'm going to North Carolina.
Ah.
Yeah. I will be there in a couple of weeks. Tracy and I are headed to North Carolina.
Where in North Carolina are you going?
We're going to the coast.
Beaufort.
Yeah, yeah. What is it called? Beaufort? Beaufort? Yeah,
Beaufort.
Beaufort. We're going to Beaufort.
Beaufort.
We're going to stay there. I don't know what they...
Just south of the Outer Banks.
Yeah, south of whatever the Outer Banks
what,
are,
what does
man,
that mean, or, though?
I don't know, man. I mean, there's a bunch of islands that are barrier islands off the coast of North Carolina, and the people from North Carolina have a designation as to what kind. I mean, they're all
Ocracoke is the end of Outer Banks.
They are all Outer Banks,
but Ocracoke is the last bit of the Outer Banks, and
right.
Beaufort is south of there.
Okay,
so Ocracoke's the last place,
but there are still.
Why would you call the coast the Outer Banks, though? That seems
because they're barrier islands. It's not the coast. So there is a coast in North Carolina, like Wilmington's on the coast.
Yeah.
Right, so there are beach communities on the coast, but then there are barrier islands.
So I went to family reunion in Emerald Isle. Would that be a barrier island?
I'm not sure. You have a computer in front of you, right?
It's not going to make any sense to you because here's the thing: there's one island that's like famous, or there's a bunch of them that are famous, or whatever famous.
It's like 60 mile stretch.
There's like Ocracoke and then North.
Avon.
But here's the thing. There's a bunch of barrier islands south of that.
That somehow don't get included.
That don't get included. Right?
So
doesn't make any sense.
I lived there for a summer when I was 20 years old, in between my junior years and senior year in college. I lived above a pizza shop with Garrick and Rudy. Rudy had a stutter. And so I got us waiting jobs at this. Look, folks, the Outer Banks at that time, at least, I mean, it's very lightly populated, right? And it was originally populated by folks who were shipwrecked, right? That's how the whole, and it was mostly like English, British prisoners, right?
Pirates.
And so the way that the town got, or the way that the Outer Banks got populated was that a man would take on two wives and two different houses. And then the kids from each of those marriages would then also procreate.
It's incest.
So it's incest. It was. I mean, there's like
incest.
Like literally, man. That like.
Well, that answers why only a portion of the Outer Banks are the Outer Banks.
Exactly.
Amongst a bunch of islands that are actually Outer Banks.
So there was like there was a phone booth, and the phone booth had one laminated note, or one laminated card, and it only had like three names on it, right? It's like Duvenet and Bouget and something else, right? It was pretty fascinating. And then the surf culture there was really interesting. But the funny story about Rudy is that he had a pretty bad stutter, you know? And so I had gotten us jobs at this seafood place. And so the seafood place didn't have a normal menu. It had fresh fish caught that day. So you had like 9 items on the menu that changed every day. So me and so I went in and I like interviewed for the 3 of us, basically. I said, we'll run your front of house. The patriarch of the restaurant in Avon had just been arrested for running cocaine up from Miami, right? So there was still a lot of that shit going on. Like
still piracy.
There was still piracy. And in fact, some people came in to try and bust up the joint one night. We had to like bust a bottle, you know, bust a bottle and like point it at him. Like we had to do that, one of those moves, you know. I mean, it was fucked up. So we interviewed. I interviewed on our behalf, and I was like, "We'll run your front of house. We'll be your servers and your bartender, and the 3 of us will work it out who bartends which night." So we would go to the beach every day, surf. I was studying for the GRE at the time, like on the beach, and then we would go from the beach in our black and whites to work at 4 o'clock. We had to do all the prep for the salads and all that shit. And everyone else that worked there were all the family people, and they were all fucking victims of incest, clearly. You know, like big foreheads, abnormally. There's just like really super
goofy teeth.
Yes, exactly. So, but the great thing, Rudy, and here's how brave Rudy is. Rudy had like a severe stutter. You know, he's like, breakfast. You know, it was like that level of stutter, right? And so he took this job waiting tables at this place where you have to like have, you have 9 new fish dishes every day. And he would go up to a table and be like, what do you want? And I sometimes would go up and like help him, you know, but get this, by the end of the summer, dude, he stopped stuttering. He had a lifelong stutter.
Huh? Wow.
And we just hung out.
What happened?
I don't know, man. He confided in me that it was a psychological deal.
He got laid?
I don't know.
Maybe he just got high.
Yeah, maybe he just got high. He was the our musical curator that summer. He played Squeeze, The Police, Red Hot Chili Peppers, and that's basically all we've listened to all summer long.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is a tall order.
But it was great.
Entire summer.
I know. But it was just, it was amazing, one of the best summers of my life. Shout out to Rudy. Again, by the end of the summer, he stopped stuttering. You know, and maybe it was because he was forced to because of the gig, you know, but just the fact that he was like brave enough to do to be a food server with a crippling stuttering thing,
right?
You know,
yeah.
And it was just amazing. It's like one of the most inspirational things that I've ever come across. So, shout out to Rudy, man. I think about Rudy all the time when I think about some of the podcast episodes that we have. I think he would be really into it. I got to reach out to him and figure out. And then Garrick Kalna, he actually ended up moving back to Ocracoke and opening the Ocracoke coffee shop.
Huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
And raising a family there.
Huh.
Yeah. Shout out to Garrett Kalna.
Huh. Might have to take a look at the map and see how far away we're going to be.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
Yeah. So I just want to say this, and then we'll call little homie and see if he'll get on the phone.
You guys need a beer?
Right. Yeah. Sure. Okay. Look, let me ask you, Spencer. All right. So you went to LSU.
Yes. Okay.
I tell people this. I'm a fan of LSU sports, but I'm not an LSU sports fan. And the distinction to me is that I'm not one of those people who's going to wear one of those fucking knit shirts or one of those weird, like, kind of sort of polo shirts flap on the back.
No, the fishing
shirts. The fishing shirts that have the LSU logo on it.
Yeah, I got
one. Look, for Father's Day, and look, shout out to my dad. Happy Father's Day. And, you know, on Saturday, I went up to Covington, Louisiana. I mean, it was around Mandeville, Covington. And we went to the Acme Oyster House up there. And I just got to say, man, it's like, it's such a creepy experience to go to places that are so deeply segregated that every single person that you see is white and only ever white people are around you. But that's the way it is in Mandeville and Covington, right? And of course, a big part of the Louisiana white people identity is this fucking LSU fandom shit that goes on. That's why I say, like, I'm a fan of LSU sports, because as a kid growing up here, I've always been a fan of LSU sports because it was the big flagship university that's in Baton Rouge, and everybody was a fan of...
to point the finger the other way, but...
Yeah.
Our biggest rival is Ole Miss, so you can imagine how much less racist we are than them.
I don't know if that's true, man. I don't know. Look, all I'm saying is this, man, is that the LSU fan is... It's a problem, man.
LSU fan is the worst fan in sports.
There's Alabama fans, too.
Oh, yeah, the Alabama fans are the worst.
I think LSU is the worst.
Oh, no.
LSU fans.
I mean, talk about Ace Bro.
Like that. Oh my God, man.
The Ace Bro.
But what I can't stand and what I don't understand about it is this: is that when I was a kid, it was not the case that people like aligned their white identity with sports fandom, and that's the case now. I mean, when I went to
that's a great point.
I mean, I'm not maligning your sports experience at LSU or anything like that, but like.
If you're a white man, person in
some,
New Orleans,
there are some the fans of LSU white are racist, so fucking annoying, man.
If you're a white racist in New Orleans,
fans of anything are annoying.
No, this is a different thing, man.
Pelicans fans are great. Saints fans are great.
Everybody's got bad fans, you know. But I mean, it's like, but people aren't like they're not into the Saints because they're also into the idea of white supremacy.
No, that's exactly what it is, Jeff. I mean, I think you're hitting on something there, man.
I think a lot of people just like LSU because they went there. They're fans of the school they went to. That's a good part
of it. It's also the biggest school in the state. It's white
too.
Supremacy.
It's like the only major college sporting wise in the state that plays in a major conference.
It's white supremacy.
I disagree. I think you're...
They're just a bunch of racists, man.
There is a big part of that.
Now you're just pulling the whole, they're racist card, which is... You can't use that all the time. Like, just because people like
sports... I can use that card.
This is the only major school in the state.
But they identify their anti-blackdom with their school, right? They're afraid of black people, and so they embrace their LSU identity.
What does that mean?
It's undeniable that there's this aspect of...
That's every state school, though.
I disagree completely.
No, it's not.
North Carolina Chapel Hill's not that way.
It's not like that for USC or Oregon State.
Those are liberal progressive schools in the South. Liberal progressive schools.
No, I agree. I agree.
You could say it about every school in the SEC, pretty much.
Pretty much every school in SEC.
LSU, though, is like unique in the sense of the douchebaggery racist, I think.
No, I disagree with that.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. It's just shitty people in all of them, like Alabama, Tennessee. Yeah, I agree. The big ones. Texas A&M, oh my God. Yeah,
that's not even a school, that's a fucking cult.
Oh, that's the worst, yeah.
Yeah, that's a cult. That's a cult. But living here in the state, it's the LSU thing has taken on kind of cult status as well. You know?
The thing is, there's no, like I was saying earlier, it's the only school in a major, you know, sporting conference for college in the state of Louisiana. You know, Mississippi has Ole Miss and Mississippi State. Texas has 1,000 of them. Louisiana just has LSU and the SEC. That's it. So
look, all I can say,
there's a reason a lot of people are going to watch it because that's the only thing that says Louisiana that's on their TVs every Saturday.
No, I understand the reason why, and it doesn't have to be this whole big racist thing. But it is.
And then you have this Bayou Classic where white businesses in downtown New Orleans closed their businesses because they're afraid of fucking black people during the Bayou Classic.
I tell you something,
which is Grambling versus Southern.
Let me just stay on the LSU thing. I don't go to certain bars to watch because when a game is on, I want to see it, right?
Yeah.
But there's certain bars that I don't go to because that type of fan shows up to that bar. And I'm like, I just don't want to be there when that person.
Well, it's a fanatic more than a casual fan.
And it's all something. No, I disagree. I just think it's a certain type of dude, and even more annoying, a certain type of lady, who's an LSU person, who the golden vagina.
Yeah, the golden V.
The golden V.
What's the golden V?
Jeff.
Joel, you brought it up, man. Explain.
Well, it's your theory, but the Golden V is a particular type of woman who really exists. I don't know if they exist outside of Louisiana, man.
Yeah, they do.
They do?
Yeah.
They.
It's another thing that's all over the South.
They trophyize their vagina.
Right. Like with glitter or what? Is it like a glitter bomb thing?
Their vagina is put on a pedestal.
I like my idea better. Like, if you just pull the panties down, it's like a glitter gram and just
poof! If we're speaking in a metaphorical sense, it's both. But, but
that should be in a porno. I want to see that.
But look, it's basically, it's like a woman who's clearly from the same background that you and I are, who thinks of herself as high and mighty and haughty and better than everybody else in the room.
Elevated.
And also
the great Puthalaya.
And it is only ever going to get with one type of fucking dude who's typically driving
an F-150,
a scratchless pickup truck.
No, yes. Scratches.
A pickup truck that has no scratches on it. At all. That has never been used in a functional manner ever. That is only a luxury vehicle, which is what pickup trucks are in the South for a lot of white guys. If that guy is like relatively in good shape and has the fishing shirt on with the LSU logo and wears Perlis shirts for the rest of the week with the crawfish thing on it, then she's going to get with that guy. That's right. That's what we're talking about. That's we're talking Golden V. But here's the thing. She doesn't come from a background that's any different than any of us in here. You know, it's like her dad was an automobile mechanic, you know, right. Blah, blah, blah.
And
know?
The Golden V.
And they're not particularly frumpy.
They tend to be frumpy.
Yeah, right. There's a frumpiness aspect to it. You know, and that's speaking, you know, from a bunch of guys that are sitting around who haven't shaved in fucking 4 days, you know, and have dirty feet. But that's okay, you know. I mean, that's what we're here to do. We're here to judge women on the It's a Good Life Babe podcast. Jeff and Joel's Tales from New Orleans.
Welcome
okay.
to the bro down.
It's a
bro
we just yeah, it's a bro down now. We're talking about golden vagina women. But look, people know what we're talking about out there. If they're listening and they're like, it's the platinum blonde with the dyed hair, right? And who's just incessantly, as the football game is on, the guys are at the bar and the gal friends are sitting behind them and they cluster around each other. There's an aura of fear and loathing that surrounds the entire group. They don't want anybody to come in close to them or anything like that. And they go to certain places and occupy certain bars. Everybody has seen these people. They know exactly.
I just like to get hammered and watch the games.
They wear those little those shorts that are super short. The girls.
I know,
do.
But where? Where?
Well, preferably in
it
the stadium.
It doesn't bother you when you... Well, preferably in the stadium. It doesn't bother you if you go to a place and it's just like douchebags everywhere.
I went to LSU. I know most of the douchebags. They're my douchebags.
I think this might be a generational thing. Spence. I think eventually you'll be like... You're going to be like, good Lord, man. Those guys were right. All these years later.
Well, just because someone's a douchebag doesn't mean I can't be friends with them.
I disagree.
There's a certain thing where it's like, look.
I'm friends with a lot of douchebags.
Okay, all right. I'm trying to paint a picture. I'm trying to put a pin on this here, man, so that you might find something that you can agree with here. Okay, so it's like this. Every single fucking play that happens, this is the kind of person that I'm talking about, right? Every play that occurs, they question it, okay? If they run a play, like when Leonard Fournette was on the team, They're like, Leonard Fournette gets 1.5 yards. They're like, we have to fire the head coach right now. We have to do. That's the kind of fan that I'm talking about. An LSU fan, not the fans of LSU, but the LSU fan is filled with that kind of like vitriol, that level. They're not going to get that way for this Ed Orgeron guy because they look at him and they're like, oh, he's like me.
Yeah.
He's like me, Ed Orgeron. Look, he's got that gritty voice and, you know, if he got really mad and his face turned purple, the N-word would probably slip out.
Yeah, he's a racist as well.
It's true, man. People feel that way. He's already been in trouble for that kind of shit.
And well, the fans love him for it.
Yeah, they like that. They like that. But look, my point is that like every play, you can't sit there. I can't enjoy a game.
You can't enjoy a game.
I can't enjoy a game if people just sit there and second guess every single play because they're so worried about, you know, we only made 1.5 yards on that play. We only made 5 yards. Or why aren't we passing the ball more? Or why aren't we doing this or that?
Well,
I think
over the past few years, there's been this collective like entitlement for LSU fans where they think we're Alabama or, you know, Texas.
God, we're
or
so
Notre Dame
not
or something.
Even
it's like,
close to Alabama.
We have, you know, a really good storied program, but we're not, you know, one of the top five. You know, we're not going to be competing for a championship every year. With Les Miles, we were getting 10 wins every year. That's pretty fucking awesome for LSU.
Sure. Like, yeah. I mean, that's
pretty stellar for any team. And most teams in NCAA would take that in a heartbeat.
No coach should ever get fired for that record.
Yeah.
You know?
No, it's like him. I compare him a little bit to Chip Kelly at Oregon in the sense that they're both great recruiters. But
well, I see it more as the Andy Reid getting the boot.
Yeah,
for Chip Kelly than it being a Chip Kelly thing.
No, like, I think I put those three.
Like Andy Reid was a great coach.
I put those three together.
Like it may have gotten to the point where he lost the team and it was time for him to go, but
no, Spencer, I have to take exception to your
But I don't think anyone in Philadelphia is saying, you know,
Andy Reid was the worst time clock.
Do not miss Andy Reid.
Andy Reid was the worst time clock management guy of all time. Like it was comical and laughable at how bad that guy was at time clock management. Period.
Well, to me, any like, guy who gets
only
the
one
Eagles
guy
to the
who's
Super
worse.
Bowl,
there's only one guy who's worse.
That's impressive because the Eagles are
Les
terrible.
Miles?
No, the Dallas Cowboys coach.
Oh, right.
Exactly. Yeah, what's that guy's name?
Man? Jason Garrett.
Oh,
look,
Garrett. Yeah.
I mean, look, Bill Simmons famously came up with the idea that like you need just to hire a kid, a teenager who's played 15,000 hours of Madden to run your clock management.
Right, exactly.
Right.
You just need somebody who watches the clock.
Exactly.
I mean, it's like
there's no other sport where the coaches don't understand the clock.
Les Miles was horrible.
Oh yeah, there were a lot of
horrible with
bad clock management games.
Yeah.
The one that I remember most is the Tennessee game where we ran out of time. But they had an extra player on the field, and so we got to play it like by the like grace of God,
play.
We ended up with one extra play,
right?
And a touchdown,
yeah.
Which also, I can't believe we had that close of a game to that Tennessee
team.
They called him the
Mad Hatter.
But that's what
that towards the end. He wasn't doing trick plays as much towards the end,
right?
It wasn't just the trick plays. It was shit like that where then people were like, "Oh my God, thank God we won anyway." You know what
we
I mean?
We would always say, like, LSU is a very good fucking team, but they play down to the level of their opponents every time. So the games were always dramatic, whether we win or not. But
well, because that's, you know, in the LSU fans' mind, that's what the, you know,
well,
the colored boys play down to their opponents.
If you remember the close games, you kind of forget the blowouts, you know.
But look, everybody gives him kudos for being, and here's the thing that people are, like, glossing over. Is that Ed Orgeron was the recruiting guy before he went over to USC, and everybody's like, he's the super recruiter that was behind the fucking the curtain, making all this stuff. Well, let's look at the people that he got. He got a dude who got arrested for fucking for forging dollar bills or something like that at some point. He got kicked off the team when we needed a quarterback, and then we had a litany of just shitty fucking quarterbacks after that, and then. When we did need a quarterback, which it seemed like Les Miles was always down on the idea of quarterbacks that in general.
Could never get a quarterback.
And yeah, but we could because we whiffed on fucking Dak Prescott. For crying out loud, when he was out there, he didn't go to Mississippi
Everyone
State.
Everyone whipped on Dak Prescott. That's why he went to Mississippi State.
No, I'm not so sure about that. I mean, how could LSU? How could we, with who we had? How could we be the team that doesn't get? I don't get it, man. I just don't get it.
Well, with Dak, we told him you're not playing quarterback. We'll put you at tight end or something.
What
at
a moronic first,
early in the recruiting
decision.
Later on, they said we'll have you a quarterback, but he'd already made his commitment.
Well,
to
he's starting
State,
in the NFL now, and these
hey,
are supposed to be.
You're not
going to
get all
for your
of them,
team.
But
you're not going to get all of them.
Also, missing out on Dak is
why would you?
Huge.
Why would we need a tight end?
The whole NFL missed out on Dak too, though.
How? I mean, you got
because
drafted when in the third
the
round?
The fourth round.
Fourth round.
He was our second pick in the fourth round for the Cowboys.
Look, I'm not saying he's even going to have a stellar career in the NFL at this point because he's going into his sophomore year and people tend to go downhill in their sophomore years.
Most improvement is made in between rookie and sophomore year. That's statistical.
Well, I mean, but that doesn't mean the team's going to play better.
Oh, I don't think they're going to do more than 13 wins by any means. But I think we'll see, you know, a more mature, better poised, and, you know, definitely throwing for more yards, more faith in him and the offense.
We'll see. I'd have to look up that stat, by the way. I'm not sure if I know if that's
accurate. Of course. It makes so much sense. The most improvement happens after your rookie year, after you've been there for a year and you've had
tell that to Mark Sanchez, man. He was a piece of garbage after his first year. That guy was terrible.
Then how come he went to two AFC championship games?
Well, running backs and defense?
Yes, exactly. They had an amazing defense, man. They had good running back.
All right. You going to call Ivan or what?
Well, oh, this is the other thing I wanted to say about that, is that the whole reason why we got into this conversation, from my vantage point, about the LSU fan versus the fan of LSU, is because LSU is in the College World Series. And this is a funny thing about Louisiana. Louisiana is the only state in the country that has a fanatic college baseball following.
South Carolina does also have a pretty big
one. You think it's at the same level as LSU?
No,
I don't think so either. I think LSU clearly, of all the sports, unambiguously, has the most fanatic baseball college baseball following of any college baseball program in the country. Clearly.
Can I say something else about Louisiana? I have an attorney that's based out of Oregon, and we're watching Oregon State versus LSU right now in baseball. So my attorney, shout out to Peter Shaver, is based out of Portland, Oregon. He's a nice old hippie dude who loves to come down to the Jazz Fest. And I consult with him on various legal matters over the past 15 years. And I called him the other day to ask him about something related to Louisiana law. And he's like, dude, Louisiana law is fucked. I can't even begin to tell you. Like, Louisiana is the most archaic, weird.
Well, we have Napoleonic code.
Right. Well, there you go. Explain what that is, Vince.
Well, let me Google that.
I mean, we have our code is based on French common law.
Right.
Not English.
I mean, that's why he says
that it's weird. He's like, you know, I mean,
it's why we have parishes instead of counties.
If you were from
it's the whole Catholic.
If you were from Quebec and you came down here, you'd be like, no, your law seems pretty fucking straight. At least it's not that crazy English bullshit. Right. You know what I mean?
That's the
only difference, man.
Right. He's just like, I can't help you.
He'd be like, thank God you don't have that inhumane English justice system that's led to the incarceration rates.
But I can tell you, he's like, call the Louisiana Democratic Party, which I did. And I got somebody on the phone from the public affairs office, LaShante. And LaShante was super nice. And she's into my city council campaign. And then she hooked me up with the Secretary of State with their campaign ethics finance office. And they were able to give me really good information over the phone. And send me a PDF with all like the legalities. Like I didn't have to... At some point I thought I was going to have to hire somebody. Like pay some money out of pocket to get an attorney to... tell me what's up, but the Secretary of State's office.
Oh, shit.
Speaking of TJ Miller, he had the whole burping bit in his. Anyway, so shout out to the Secretary of State office for providing good public information about campaign finance law.
Wow, that's an amazing statement in the state of Louisiana, that there's transparency in government at some levels of government.
I got somebody on the phone like right away, and they told me exactly what was up. They guided me to the PDF. They walked me through it. They basically, and I was like, look, I know I can read all this, but can I just ask you the questions? And they were like, can I start fundraising like this week? And they're like, yeah.
It's good to know that it's easier to run for office than it is to get a cop that will come to your door and aid you instead of bringing you to jail because you called them.
Exactly.
That's a good system we have here in Louisiana. Good. I want to run for office.
That's the Napoleonic
one call. That's all. That's what it means.
That is the Napoleonic
code. Either run for office and go to jail because of it.
Well, can I tell
or
you?
Or go to jail.
There's all this wink, wink stuff with running for office. The two phone. Okay, I had three phone calls, and they've all said something along the lines of, "Look, there's not really a rule for any of this."
Jesus Christ. That's exactly what you want to hear on the front end of starting a campaign.
Oh, well, we've known that about campaign finance.
Right, we don't have any. There aren't any rules for there's so many fucking rules. I bet there's a handbook of rules.
No, but the person from the city council's office...
That's because they don't know what the rules are.
No, they said, look, we don't vet you, right? Like, we don't decide if you're qualified. Because that was the first thing I had to do, Jeff. I had to figure out, can I run? Right,
you just have to be of age, I think. Right,
they just said, look, your opponent might call you out on some shit, you know, but we don't vet you, just know that. Wink, wink. And then the Secretary of State person was like, look, you could put the money in your personal account, it's not illegal, but it could just be a pain in the ass for you later, you know, you can do whatever the fuck you want, you know. But you should probably set up. Anyway, it was just a lot of that type of thing with Louisiana politics.
I would take all of it with a grain of salt.
Sure.
You mean all of the fundraising money?
I would just take I would take anything anyone tells you with a grain of salt, because it could be the case that the next person you get on the phone
tells you something entirely different.
Right?
Sure, sure.
It says, "Good God, no! Don't put any of that money in your account." Who told you that?
Well, no, I'm not. I mean, they said, "Look," they said, "just go down to the bank." And here's the other thing she said. It was interesting. She was like, "Some of the banks don't like to do campaign accounts." I'm like, "I don't understand why." She's like, "Because they don't make money off of it." I'm like, "I don't get it. I mean, I have a Capital One bank account. They're not making shit off of me right now, except like maybe $8 a month or whatever."
I don't, you know, I mean, what the, I don't even understand what that means.
She was just like, we've gotten a lot of feedback from people that when they try and set up a campaign account, they get hassled.
Well, I don't know what to say about that. I mean, I don't know why that would be.
Me either.
But,
because I'm gonna make way more.
The
money
job of a bank in terms of a checking account is just to say yes.
Exactly.
If you have some dough.
And I'm gonna make way more money on that than I do like on my job. You know, my personal account.
Unless there's like legal liability because of corruption that has happened.
Right.
Because we are the most litigious and corrupt state in the country, because so many politicians just raise that money and then take it and go and buy fucking cars with it. Or, you know, fucking giant stuffed elephants for their daughter's graduation, or right, hookers, or whatever the fuck.
Folks,
case
I'm not
going to
do that. I'm gonna I'm gonna buy cases.
We're gonna
of water
get a real giraffe
for the campaign.
Yeah, yeah, we're gonna buy a real giraffe. Look, let me tell you something.
I want to get a bus, Jeff.
We're at 54 minutes now, folks.
Here's the plan. Here's what I want to do with the money from the campaign. I want to get a bus, like an old school bus, and put a giraffe in it and just drive around on Sundays.
And then we'll attach a JJ for DD sign to the giraffe's neck?
Yes.
There you go.
Like a scarf.
Yeah. Then people will say you're cruel to animals. Let's do this.
You shouldn't be running for office. You should be a dentist.
So look, we're about 55. We're about 55 minutes in, and we haven't called little homie Ivan. But maybe we should take a break, come back for part two, and then we'll call Ivan. We'll see if we can get him. Oh, during the break, we're going to try and text him and make sure that he's available. And so that's it for this episode, folks. It's a goodlightbabe.com. Jeff and Joel's Tales from New Orleans. And not the episode, but part one of episode 49. We'll see you on the next one. Click on it.
Yeah, you're right.